Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. Hi there. My name is Mark Shiver, and so glad to have you listening to the program today. I hope that you had a wonderful weekend. We're going to talk with Dr. Andrew Taylor from North Carolina State University about some of the things we can expect now that the North Carolina General Assembly is going to convene in a couple of days, his thoughts about the brand new Trump administration and Governor Cooper and the relationship that he has with the General Assembly and how that might evolve over time. Before we get any further, we'd like to say that former North Carolina House of Representatives member Ruth Samuelson has died at age 58. She was fighting cancer, and so our prayers go to the Samuelson family. I had the opportunity to interact with her when I worked at the General Assembly on several occasions. She was always very kind, very gracious, and it is just very heartbreaking that she would be taken from us at such a young age, 58. So if you think about it, please say a prayer for the Samuelson family as they deal with the loss of former House Member Ruth Samuelson here in North Carolina. Over the weekend, we saw, of course, Friday, the inauguration of Donald Trump, which, I, by the way, his speech I thought was outstanding. It caused within me a response of great feelings of patriotism, and I was overwhelmed, frankly. I thought it was fantastic. We also saw the Women's March, which defies any kind of explanation or adjectives. I just cannot come up with anything appropriate at this point in time as a description, not because of those who were there with genuine concerns about women's rights and marginalization and all that, but some of the signs were just unbelievable. And as you know, we've seen with Moral Monday, a lot of the people that show up at these protests are not, you know, folks like you and me, just regular people, but they're paid, they're driven in and brought in by those who are trying to instigate. And this was most one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. Well attended, you have to say that, in many cities across the country. But if you would like to see on display a great variety of just unbelievable, hate-filled signs and actions, just go on Twitter and hashtag Women's March, and it'll blow your mind. Absolutely amazing. So anyway, as we get through that, President Trump will be moving forward with his agenda, already battling with the media, which is no surprise. And we'll see. We'll see if he's able to move forward and unwind Obamacare and get the tax penalties off of our lives and out of our lives and out of our finances. We'll see if the Republicans in Congress will remember that folks were not real happy, and that is how Donald Trump got elected. And we'll see if they pay attention and stop wasting our tax dollars. And yeah, it should be interesting. Of course, I was talking with my wife over the weekend about, she was reading an article in the paper that listed some of the people, the Congress people, the representatives we have here in North Carolina, and she was asking me if they had been guests on the show, and most of them had been. And I was thinking about that as we were going through the list, that a lot of these people from North Carolina are really, really doing the work and staying true to their conservative roots, you know, folks like Representative Meadows and Walker, Representative Fox, obviously, Representative Pittenger. And so good folks that we've had on the program. We hope to have Representative McHenry on soon and Walter Jones, Congressman Jones. So just continuing to widen the net, so to speak, here on What Matters in North Carolina. But the point of what I'm saying is that I think that North Carolina is well represented. At least on the House side, by folks who remember their conservative roots and are trying to do the best they can for the people of North Carolina and our country in spending our tax dollars wisely. And so that's a good thing. On the Senate side, that's another issue for another day. Well, we appreciate you listening to What Matters in North Carolina. Thank you so much. And now it's time for me to go to school. I'm going to take a quiz with Dr. Andy Taylor from North Carolina State University. Thank you for listening to What Matters in North Carolina. It's always a pleasure to speak with one of the preeminent voices of political analysis, both when it comes to North Carolina and nationally, Dr. Andrew Taylor from NC State. Dr. Taylor, welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Well, I want to do something a little different with you right out of the gate here. I want to be one of your students, and I want you to give me a essay question. And the question would be, describe the relationship between Governor Roy Cooper and the North Carolina General Assembly. And I want you to tell me what my answers should say so that I'll get an A on that question.
Well, at the moment, that on the surface, at least, everybody's saying that the relationship is okay, that there's conversation going on, communications going on, that there are obviously philosophical differences, but there may be some common ground to work to some agreement on legislative matters. But there's a long way to go. We've just begun the long session. Governor Cooper's been in office a couple of weeks. There's 4 years to go, and there's plenty of things that can obviously happen to change the nature of that relationship. And obviously, it makes sense for the governor's office and the legislative leadership to sort of say that they want to work together. But we really haven't had a lot of thorny issues come up yet, and there's plenty of time, obviously, for that relationship to change. But if you had a positive approach in your answer, at least as of today, I wouldn't necessarily grade it incorrectly.
I think I'm surprised that perhaps you wouldn't want to include the word acrimony in there, because certainly they've gone at it a little bit over the General Assembly trying to take some of his powers away, and then him trying to expand Medicaid. So,
there has been that. Obviously, I mean, these are differences that have been shown already. And in fact, one of the interesting things, of course, as well, Mark, is that we're seeing a resort to legal action pretty quickly. And this was actually obviously a theme in the McCrory years as well. You don't have to be in the legislative majority to resort to legal action against the administration.
Right.
Despite that going on, you're right on Medicaid and on the sort of power grab special session, for lack of a better descriptor for it. Despite that, they're still sort of coming out and saying, we do want to work together, but these are early days, and that's a sort of script that is something that both sides will obviously follow. It's when legislative matters really start bubbling up in the General Assembly, when they really get to work and things make their way to the governor's desk, we'll start, I think, seeing obviously even more friction.
Our guest is Dr. Andrew Taylor from NC State University. Do you think that the governor will come out with a budget that is just really over the top, and then if the General Assembly rejects that, he'll use that as fodder to, say, well, they just don't want to give teachers a big raise, they just don't want to do this, they just don't want to do that? Or do you think it'll be, within the parameters of a typical governor's budget?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what kind of strategy is used. The budget, of course, is basically one of the only things that must get done. In theory, of course, it doesn't have to get done, but
right,
there are sort of legislative and political pressures that mean that we need a budget. Otherwise, functions of state government shut down, and there's all sorts of political and policy implications with that. So we do have to have a budget. And so that's a one opportunity for the governor to be able to really try to set the legislative agenda. In every other instance, he's waiting for things to come to his desk. And obviously, with the large Republican majorities in both the House and Senate, much of the things that are going to come to his desk are going to be things that he doesn't like. So here's a chance for him to sort of shape the agenda rather than be in a purely responsive mode. How does he deal with that opportunity? You sort of framed it in terms of whether he just gives sends over a budget that clearly the Republicans aren't gonna like, and sort of play hardball, or does he give them something that they can see some good in, and possibly set the stage for some real negotiations? I think a lot of that will depend upon the strategic environment he finds himself in once we get closer to budget time, towards the late spring. If he feels strong and he feels that the public opinion's behind him, he might do option A, as you described it. If he feels that, you know, what is he feels somewhat vulnerable, and he feels that the most important thing is to get a budget done relatively close to the July 1 deadline, it might be more of the option B. But I think I don't think the governor himself and his top staff themselves know exactly what kind of budget they want to put forward.
Dr. Taylor, in terms of relationships, staying on that theme for a moment, conservatives, particularly those who are vocal, like myself, and I guess and some others, have really supported the General Assembly throughout the whole House Bill 2, you know, scenario. And the idea was that, you know, men being in women's bathrooms was just something that was unimaginable. And so the General Assembly has enjoyed great support from conservatives across the board for that legislation. Now we see that last week Governor Cooper said that he's been talking with Senator Berger and Speaker Moore about trying to come up with a way to repeal House Bill 2. And I've spoken with some folks, for example, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, who has been very vocal throughout the whole House Bill 2 odyssey as one who supports the legislation, Tammy Fitzgerald of the North Carolina Values Coalition. And the question I asked them was, if Senator Berger and Speaker Moore move forward and get House Bill 2 repealed, will you feel let down? And both of them said yes. And so here's my question for you. Will the leadership of the General Assembly, and I'm talking about, you know, Berger and Moore, will they catch any flack or blowback from the conservative arm of the Republican Party should they move forward with repealing House Bill 2 in light of the fact that, you know, conservatives have supported them since this whole thing began? Or do you think it'll be a non-event?
No, they'll catch flack, but they're catching flack now as well from a number of Republican constituencies, particularly on the business side. So, I mean, it's a tough thing, right? We know HB 2 is controversial. You know, you'd have to be in a cave for the last year to not think that it's been controversial, and that there is. You look at public opinion data, and you know, it's controversial, with significant minorities supporting HB 2 and significant minorities opposing it. It's very close. You know, there's a sizable number of people who are sort of caught on both sides of the issue. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be controversial, and it's an interesting issue, Mark, because it does seem to cut within the Republican Party with certain business constituencies who don't seem to think that the social implications of the issue are particularly important,
right?
Starting to feel whether it's real, or they're anticipating that they're going to feel economic pressures as a result of it. So, I mean, they're really in a sort of tough place. Yes, they're going to catch flak if there is on the cards here a meaningful repeal effort, but they're going to catch flak if they stand pat. And apparently, you know, there was a meaningful repeal effort before Christmas as well.
I mean, yes.
This isn't, you know, this isn't new. All of a sudden, the the Republican leadership in the General Assembly seems to be giving way on HB2. Apparently, if it weren't for a sort of the city of Charlotte changing its mind or some sort of last-minute breakdown in negotiations, we would have had an HB. It's plausible we could have had an HB2 repeal before Christmas. So, they're going to catch flak regardless, I think.
Yeah. Our guest, Dr. Andrew Taylor from NC State University, what are you looking forward to or anticipating the most as the General Assembly reconvenes here in a couple of days? Do you think it'll just be more tax reform, more regulatory reform, or do you think that there will be some more controversial things? For example, will they try to navigate a voter ID bill that they think might pass muster with the courts this time? Do you think there'll be more of the social type legislation that we've seen from
I think that there's probably more agreement to be found with the executive branch on economic issues, possibly in terms of tax relief, possibly in terms of some strategic spending initiatives, although a lot of that, I think, is going to find its way into the budget, where the governor, as I noted earlier in the conversation, Mark, has a little bit more leverage because the budget really does have to get through and probably would have to get through with his signature, I would suspect, rather than by a veto override. I think it's sort of unimaginable that there would, I mean, all the Republicans could stick together on the budget, but budget is such a big issue, and it appeals to legislators in so many ways I think it would probably have to go through with the governor's signature. So those things might, the executive branch might try to push those things into a grand sort of bargain, which would be a sort of mega budget bill. With regards to those other issues, it's interesting. I mean, I think if you look at the public opinion and you take those issues, we just talked about HB2, and you compare that to voter identification, there is much more public support for some form of voter ID bill than there is for HB2. I mean, I just talked about the public opinion on HB2. It's very, very split. The North Carolina public are all over the place on it. But a significant majority of North Carolinians, a significant majority of Americans, believe that when going to the polls, voters should present some form of identification so that administrators can be sure that that's who they are. Obviously, as you noted, the current bill hasn't passed constitutional muster, at least as far as the court's concerned. So that may be something that can be done. And possibly, that Governor Cooper would sign or put him on the back foot politically, or could be done with a veto override. But there's two reasons why we might expect less action, legislative output, from this session of General Assembly than a couple of the recent ones. One is the obvious one, which is, a Democratic governor.
Right.
But the second one is that a lot of the stuff has been done. There are the public policy in this state has been moved back in the rightward direction. And there isn't sort of the pent-up kind of demand. So you might compare this, for example, with 2011-2012, the last session before Governor McCrory's victory, when Governor Perdue was in office, but there was a new, fresh Republican majorities in General Assembly who had a really, really, really long list of things that they wanted to do facing a Democratic governor, and they went for it. This time around, the to-do list is a lot shorter because many of those things have been accomplished. And we have a governor at the beginning of his term rather than in the last 2 years. So for those two reasons, I would suspect that we would see probably a little less frenetic activity in the General Assembly than we've seen in the past 4 to 6 years.
And this might be kind of a tangential question, but are you expecting, for example, the Council of State? We saw Superintendent of Public Instruction June Atkinson lose. Mark Johnson, who is the new superintendent, has some of his own ideas. We've saw Wayne Godwin over at Insurance lose, and now we have Mike Causey. Do you anticipate from the Council of State, Dr. Taylor, any kind of earth-shattering or really different moves in the area of insurance and or education? Or are these things that are just so, you know, embedded from a bureaucratic standpoint that it would be hard for Causey and or Johnson to really make any kind of radical changes?
Well, it's difficult to make any radical changes that might have material effects on the everyday lives of many North Carolinians in those offices without legislative authority to do so. Mm. And in fact, on the not so much, obviously not on the insurance side, but on the superintendent public instruction side, we've already seen that with an effort to by the General Assembly to erode the powers of the state board of education and transfer some of those over to the superintendent of public instruction. So it's difficult to unilaterally do that, even if you would want to, maybe because your predecessor, and as you mentioned in those two cases, was of the different party. Without legislative authority, you can do things at the margins, obviously, and that might have an effect in those narrow sectors of North Carolina life. But to really do something that, as I said, has a material effect on the everyday lives of most of us in the state, it won't happen without a change in legislation and with an expansion of the powers of the office.
And finally, quickly turning nationally, Dr. Taylor, first 100 days from Donald Trump and his administration, now President Trump, there was a lot of bluster, a lot of promises. Here, too, the federal bureaucracy, you know, it lives on no matter who is the president. What are you expecting, if anything, really dramatic out of the Trump administration the first couple of months?
Well, there's always the executive orders that new presidents can issue, which, especially when you have a change in party, revises a lot of things done by the previous administration. We've already seen that with regards to Obamacare. Today we'll see that in terms of some responses to trade, and which was obviously an important issue during the campaign. So we understand that the Trump administration is going to formally withdraw the United States from TPP. We knew that was going to happen anyway. He's been communicating with his peers at the head of the Canadian and Mexican governments, talking about getting them together, and with as a prelude to a possible, I don't know if it's a NAFTA overturn, but it may be a NAFTA overhaul, revising some of the, and this was of course all stuff that the president mentioned during his campaign. So I would look to that, and then of course on the heavier lifts, we're going to see I think in Congress, efforts at tax reform, and a not just a sort of watering down of Obamacare, of course, but a concerted effort to repeal and replace. So that's going to be a lot of what we're going to see in the first 100 days, and also then in the new administration working out America's place in the world. President Trump has, of course, many different positions on national security and foreign policy matters than President Obama did, and so we're going to have a new foreign policy team in place, and it'll be interesting to see how they try to sort of readjust the United States relationships with many important countries and position in the world.
Well, we'll leave it right there. Dr. Taylor, as always, we appreciate your insight. It's excellent, and thank you for being our guest on What Matters in North Carolina.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
All right. Have a great day, sir.
Thank you.
Well, I think I would get a good grade in Dr. Taylor's class. At least I hope I would. Certainly, I would try. Always love talking to him. He has great insight and good friend of the show. And we appreciate Dr. Andrew Taylor from North Carolina State University joining us here on What Matters in North Carolina. Well, we're looking forward to seeing what happens the first 100 days or so under the Trump administration. We're looking forward to the North Carolina General Assembly convening in a couple of days. And I want to put a nice plug in for nccapitalconnection.com. You can go there, and as the session kicks off, stay informed. Nice tag team. You can listen to what matters in North Carolina, and you can also read nccapitalconnection.com, and you'll be covered. I mean, absolutely. In fact, our colleague, Matt Calder, has written a very interesting piece about the concealed carry bill that Representative Hudson has filed. Also, some newsworthy items about President Trump's speech and his call for America First nationalism. And so, really, and this is an article that's gotten a lot of run, will Cooper, Governor Cooper, ignite or douse Second Amendment legislation? Of course, Matt is the host of NC Gundad here at freedomactionnetwork.com, so you can listen to that. But go to NC Capital Connection and, hey, stay informed. Again, a great tag team, freedomactionnetwork.com and nccapitalconnection.com. As always, thanks for listening to What Matters in North Carolina. Be sure to tell your friends and your family. They can find us at freedomactionnetwork.com and also in the iTunes and Google Play stores as well. Until next time, my name is Mark Scheiber. Thanks for listening to What Matters in North Carolina.